Hey everybody, thanks for joining me, this week. I have Sarah Pocock on. She is an amazing artist, a great cartoonist. Well, she's an amazing cartoonist too, just wanted to use two different adjectives. She's really funny. She is a big comedy nerd. She goes to see a lot of live comedy. And on her Tumblr, you can find a lot of her sketches of these stand-ups and, you know, the different shows that she sees. So I'll make sure to put links up to her Tumblr and her Twitter and everything so that you can see her art. She wanted to talk about Paul F. Tompkins, and I'm very excited that we finally get to talk about him, and specifically Freak Wharf, which is a great album. You really should get it. You can't get it on vinyl. Doesn't really matter because it's really, really good. So yeah, that's it. Check it out, and again, rate us highly on iTunes if you want. Say something nice on iTunes. That would be the one thing. If you're gonna say something nice. If you're gonna rate us how you feel like rating us. But if you don't want to rate us highly, I'd recommend maybe don't. You know. Anyway, enjoy the episode. Enjoy Sarah Pocock. Enjoy some clips of Paul F. Tompkins. Hey everybody, thank you for joining us this week. I didn't even ask how to pronounce your last name. Is it Pocock?
It is Pocock. You got right. It on the first
Yay,
try.
Good. Okay, because the thing is, I have a weird, funny foreign last name, and people don't pronounce it right ever, so I'm never sure.
It's Klom.
It is Klom.
Yeah.
But you've heard the show before, so you cheated, so that's fine. That's okay. But you wanted to talk about Paul F. Tompkins. No surprise. You want to talk about Paul F. Tompkins' Freak Wharf?
Yes, the one you picked. That's the one I picked.
And let's establish how... Well, I know you because Paul F. Tompkins is always spreading word about your art. You've drawn him a million times and animated him.
Almost.
Yeah, and it's great, and it's wonderful stuff. So that's why I wanted, after seeing how many comedians you've drawn, and obviously you've seen more stand-up than I have, I know that. So why did you pick Paul F. Tompkins? So why specifically do you want to talk about him?
Because he is, he's an incredible... Oh my God, I'm already nervous.
It's okay. Don't worry. It's all right.
Do you edit these, by the way?
No. I can if you want.
Okay, well, let's keep trucking along, then. Okay. He's the person sort of responsible for my interest in the LA comedy scene and my interest in becoming involved in that world as a person who goes to shows and draws things and animates things and sort of pays tribute to my interest in...
That's awesome.
In LA comedy. And it's something... I've gotten into fairly recently over the past handful of years. Mm-hmm. I've never really been a comedy nerd type person until I moved out to LA and sort of discovered this while I was here.
Yeah. Where'd you come from originally? Where'd you come from?
I moved here from Minnesota.
Oh, really?
Where I went to college. Mm-hmm. Yeah, art school. But I'm from all over the place.
Okay.
I never lived any one place for very long.
I relate to that. So you came out here, and what was drawing you to watching comedy if you hadn't really done it before?
I came out here, and then I started going to grad school, and I started getting really busy and drawing all the time and being at the computer a lot. Mm-hmm. And I discovered podcasts when those sort of blew up. and listening to lots of podcasts, you start to notice when certain people make appearances.
Yeah.
and you start to notice the same names over and over again.
Sure.
That was sort of the first, my first foray into my interest. Into comedy. Because, growing up, stand-up was never really something that I sought out.
That's same here, yeah.
Yeah. I loved sketch comedy. Mm-hmm. Kids in the Hall was really big for me.
And, yeah.
I remember when Upright Citizens Brigade first came on Comedy Central. That was so bizarre and amazing and incredible.
Sure.
And I loved that show a lot. So
my phone just went off. Let's pretend that didn't happen.
Oh, okay.
This is supposed to be silent. I'm an unprofessional asshole.
Oh, that's okay.
I apologize.
No, you're giving me a chance to try to collect my thoughts.
That's fine.
Before I start rambling on again.
I'm actually, the thing is, I've been here for 10 years now. I've been in here in LA for 10 years. And I've seen maybe two or three stand-up shows. So that's why... I'm just like, and I didn't get drawn to it. For me, it was again podcasts that drew me to it, because I think again, growing up, it was mostly sketch comedy for me. And in my brain, I wasn't thinking of stand-up as a thing that was still around. I knew it was, but it wasn't. I wasn't conscious of it. Because,
right.
You know, where I came from, it wasn't a thing.
Yeah, yeah, me too. That's exactly how I felt about it. And I've lived in L.A. since 2007, so I've been out here. I was out here for a couple of years before I started going out and seeing shows and experiencing comedy as something in the moment, something to share with people in an audience and something in a space rather than something I just listened to through headphones after the fact.
Sure.
And Paul F. Tompkins is a huge part of that, too.
Yeah, yeah. Did you... So when's the first time you saw him live, then, after hearing him on a bunch of podcasts?
It was actually a while. Was getting my master's degree in experimental animation at CalArts. Uh-huh. So I, like, being in grad school, I was just too busy, really, to go out. And still, even though I listened to a lot of podcasts, I hadn't developed an interest in going out and seeing shows live.
Yeah.
And it was through, Doug Loves Movies, maybe. Paul was on a bunch of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was always very, like, funny and spontaneous and seemed very sharp and quick.
Yeah.
And because of that, I sought out his work, Impersonal and Freakwharf were all that were out at the time, I think.
Yeah.
And that, and Freakwharf specifically, what I love so much about it is it starts out with, like, just rambling.
I know.
Rambles.
It's amazing.
Like me just now, trying to say that word.
It's so good.
It's just riffing. Like, he's just talking from the top of his head. And that was the first time that I realized, oh my God, this is an art form. Like, stand-up is art.
Yeah.
It's exactly what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he really kind of broke the mold in a certain way, because I know he came from the quote-unquote alt comedy scene, but he doesn't still feel that way. He doesn't feel like he's stuck in an old comedy form or even alt comedy. He's got his own thing. And
like, I am, honestly, I feel like I'm revealing myself to be a total charlatan as a comedy nerd here, but I'm so new to it, to enjoying live stand-up and live shows, that whole debate of, like, club comic versus alt comic is sort of before I got interested in it.
Me too. I didn't know anything about it. And I you can see this wall. This is legit. I have been studying comedy my whole life. That was not a thing. Like I said, stand-up was totally out of my experience. So I totally... that I don't think that disqualifies you from being a comedy nerd. You again, you do the same thing. You express your love for comedy in a very comedic and interesting way through your, you know, through your animation, through your art. Because your art seems to reflect stand-up in a really interesting way. I can't even explain it. I'm being an ass about I draw, and I still can't even explain why I like your stuff so much. Oh. But I think it's very expressive, and it doesn't come across as just, like, your art doesn't come across just as still lives. It still feels very much like I'm in a comedy setting, because it reflects, I don't know if it's the lines, I don't know what it is, but it's really good stuff. And I'm rambling, too. See? Don't feel bad. This
okay,
is what
good.
Happens. This is what happens.
Okay, good.
I get nervous. I speak too much. I say things I'm not really sure that I should be saying. It's okay.
I feel like we have a connection.
Yeah, it's
in
good.
This way.
It's good.
It's totally,
you know? So now
totally
you
good.
Should feel free to say something you're not certain of.
Say something I'm not certain of?
Mm-hmm. Or something you are certain of, because now you should be confident, because I've proven myself to not know what I'm doing.
Sure. well, now that that's out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, the first time I saw him live was actually, was it early 2012, I think. It was actually at Largo in the Little Room. David Reese, who's a very funny cartoonist and artisanal pencil sharpener.
Oh, yes, right.
Was doing a book, like, his book had just come out, so he was doing a book tour, and he did a show at Largo, where he demonstrated how to, some pencil sharpening techniques, and then he had some guest stand-ups. Andy Daly was there,
okay.
And then Paul F. Tompkins was there. And I had already been a fan sort of online and listening to his stuff for a couple of years. And I was very, very just thrilled to see him do his thing. He did about 10 minutes of like some personal storytelling material, which is sort of like his style now.
Yeah.
And it was totally awesome.
Did you meet him right after, or did you...
Yes, yeah. I was so nervous.
I bet.
So nervous.
I wouldn't be able to handle it. I'm too big of a fan, I don't think.
Like, the way I'm rambling right now, it's like, multiply that times a billion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, totally.
And I had, like, this little postcard that I'd drawn, like, of him on it, and it was like, Paul F. Tompkins, awesome. The famous comedian. And I was, like, shaking. Like, I'm sorry to bother you. Here's a thing I made. And and he couldn't have been nicer to me.
Yeah.
Like, he knew about my art already. And he was like, oh, your art is so great. And
that's so cool.
Like, very, very cool.
To already know about it. Like, that's kind of got to blow your mind a little bit, right?
It did.
Yeah. That's so...
Well, he knew about my art because I drew him.
Sure.
And, like, tagged it on Twitter.
Whatever. That's, like, that he knew about it. Like, that's so cool.
You might find yourself saying, those first guys, they talked, but then they knew when enough was enough. And then this guy is like, doesn't he get it? How many times can I look at my watch? Or... nudge my girlfriend. Like, don't we have to go meet some people? I guess what I'm saying is you're going to be bored. Be careful for that weird shout out to boredom. Please forgive me while I unscrew the cap of my Voss water. Voss is my favorite because it looks like... I like to pretend I'm drinking shampoo. Oh. It's an acquired taste. I don't think you would enjoy it. Like, I'm a very sort of evolved person, so I've gone beyond traditional beverages.
Why Freak Wharf?
This is sort of leading into, like... what I find fascinating about Paul F. Tompkins as a performer and as an artist, in terms of his podcast, which is, like, have you heard it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
The sort of theater of the mind, like, crazy.
It's much more artful than anything most of us do.
Oh, my
it's
God.
It's so good.
It's so amazing. And Freak Wharf was sort of my introduction to that, because I hadn't heard his podcast yet.
Oh, okay.
I didn't. I think it was out. Like, maybe it had just come out.
Okay.
But yeah, I listened to Freak Wharf and I heard this riffing, and I thought it was such an incredible. I feel like I was watching someone's process, and, like, being around a lot of artists, I spend a lot of time around people who are sketching and like erasing, and, like, you get to see people make art in the moment, which is very thrilling and exciting for me.
Sure.
But comedy, I always see, like, up until recently, I'd always seen just, like, the finished, you know, polished TV show or comedy special or, you know, the final product after the fact.
Yeah.
And I hadn't discovered the joys yet of just, like, going out and seeing someone work out something new or, like, the things that Paul does, which is just, you know, come up with whatever it is, like, whatever topic is on his mind and just riffing on it, which seems incredible to me.
Yeah. No, it's, I hadn't actually thought about it that way, and that's stupid that I hadn't, is that it is watching him sort of sketch, you know, watching him pull stuff out of nowhere is so much better than watching so many people's polished work.
It really is.
It's scary. It's scary. I mean, I know he's been doing it forever. He's been doing it since he was tiny, you know, but, like, he's just... But he's gone, and he's evolved in such a different way. I mean, especially if you watch, like, his old TV specials, like, his really old stuff. Yes, storytelling, but, like, it's still so much stronger now that he had all these polished old pieces, but if he can sit here and riff for these first three tracks of this album, it still makes something better. I don't
like my favorite moment on the whole album is in He's talking about like nodding off in public, like falling asleep, and how it's really uncomfortable to do in church, with which I totally identify with, because I grew up as a Mormon going to church every Sunday, and it's the most dull thing in the entire world. It's awful. But there's this moment where he's sort of segueing into it in his mind, and there's sort of a beat of silence, and he just goes, "Church, still hanging in there." And it's so perfect. Like, just the timing of it and, and the delivery of it, it feels practiced. It feels rehearsed.
Right.
And it's deceptively effortless.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I would describe his, you know, style of comedy. Makes it look effortless, but there's so much care and thought that goes into everything.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, I as I'm listening to it the whole time, I'm just suspicious. I'm like, how much of this is just from nowhere? Like, how can he be doing this from nothing? Like, these have to have been thoughts that have been crafted for a while, but still, they're coming out too conversational, like it says. You know, it calls it, the three first tracks are called Riff Number 1, 2, and 3, aren't they, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I buy it, but it's frustrating that they're that good.
I know.
You know, it's impossible. But do you, and I don't want to totally derail it, but I do want to talk a little bit more about, like, some of the art that you do.
Sure.
Are you doing it, I mean, just throughout the show, or are you just looking down and drawing when you're watching comedy shows?
Sure. Oh, yeah, I guess I should explain why I'm here. Like, why you know me, who I am. so I'm just artist animator working in LA. My day job is an art director, but like the things I sort of do for fun, and the reason people know me is from my blog, which is sort of half sketches and like personal comics, and then half comedy sketches and animation sketches I do at shows, and then animation of characters from podcasts and Comedy Bang Bang and Thrilling Adventure Hour and things like that.
So I
spend a lot of time going out to comedy shows, and I do a lot of sketching while I'm there. I'll usually have I have a mini sketchbook in my bag that I carry with me everywhere. And I always have emergency drawing utensils on my person. Like, I have a pen around my neck.
That's awesome.
In case I need it.
Sure.
And at places like UCB and where else? Like, MBAR is really good for drawing. Like, really small places where I can sit close to the stage and where it's lit.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just sit there and draw through the show.
That's awesome.
And I try not to be intrusive about it.
Sure.
And it's all, thankfully, it's something that everyone is really cool with. Like, I've never been yelled at for drawing during a show.
Right.
But I'm always nervous that it might happen. Like, I try to be polite about it.
It's not nearly as intrusive as a flash, though, or somebody shooting a damn video. So,
yeah.
It's a little more appreciative. You're not giving anything away. You're not stealing anything from it, you know? You're reflecting what they've done as a whole in, like, one or two drawings.
Right. You know? And then I put them up and then, you know, tell people about them. And usually the response is people are very, you know, flattered and excited.
Sure.
And it's just sort of my way of appreciating comedy and...
And I think everybody should look at your blog. What's the address again, though? Because I don't memorize any of them. I just follow and then forget.
Sure. It's sarahpocock.tumblr.com.
I probably could have guessed that and should have just said that anyway. just to wing it. But yeah, I mean, you've got some great, like I said, great sketches, a really wonderful animations. I think the first thing I saw was Paul F. Tompkins in a cape. I think that was the first thing I saw.
Yes, that was Paul F. Tompkins in character as... Andrew Lloyd Webber, from the Time Bobby episode of Comedy Bang Bang, which is maybe my favorite piece of comedy from the past decade. It's so good. It's him insane. And Bobby Moynihan doing this orphan in a crazy voice, and it, like, you just have to listen to it. It's amazing. It's insane.
It's wonderful.
And I loved it so much that I did a little animated loop of Paul F. Tompkins in character, like, carrying a little... orphan on his shoulders.
That's so good. Let's see. Do you... well, I guess let's get back to the album. You were just talking about your favorite bit was the nodding off in church part, and then that brought you sort of to how you were raised. Were you raised around comedy much at all? I mean,
no,
I didn't think so.
Not at all.
Being a Mormon, I mean, I can't imagine it was a big.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I wasn't even allowed to watch PG-13 movies.
Oh man.
Yeah. I had to discover all of my pop culture references, sort of. In high school, when I made cooler friends than me, and they shared their knowledge,
right?
And then, of course, and like becoming a young adult and moving away for college,
sure.
And that's where I found. And I had Kids in the Hall when I was a teenager,
yeah.
But in college is where I found like UCB and mm-hmm. Mr. Show and
yeah.
like all of these sort of seminal. Sketch comedy.
That's so cool.
Programs.
It's weird. I mean, I guess I take for granted the fact that I had parents who were just like almost shoving it down my throat that comedy was, you know what I mean. So did you share it? So that, but like, you just said it. You had friends in high school and stuff. Did you sit around and share comedy, or was it they just told you about a thing and you sought it out, or were you watching stuff or listening to stuff with people in high school?
We would watch like Saturday Night Live and stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
Comedy has not been a big part of my life until very recently.
Sure.
Very recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I've sort of jumped in head first,
mm-hmm.
and now I love it. And I'm kind of lucky in a way because I have this treasure trove of, like, a back catalog
mm-hmm.
of all this stuff that I missed out on growing up
sure.
that I can go through and appreciate now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, high school... Not much.
No. Did you make any friends through comedy? I would imagine it would be more recent, but have you made friends like from these shows, like watching these shows?
Oh my! Now I have.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Not only that, but have gotten work.
That's awesome.
That way.
Yeah.
And that was another goal of mine. Like when I started becoming interested in comedy, I decided, I really want to work with these people.
Yeah.
Like, I really want to work with these people. But, like,
mm-hmm.
what they do is incredible.
Sure.
And, like, again, Paul F. Tompkins is a big part of that. Like, I respect this person so much. Like, the way that he is a master of his craft makes me want to work harder and,
sure.
like, improve my technique, too.
Of course, yeah.
So I can work with people like him in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that was a huge... motivational thing for me to start going out and start seeing these things live
mm-hmm.
and watching people work and
sure.
watching their process.
Yeah.
And then talking to them afterwards and, you know, sort of introducing myself and
yeah.
then showing people my work. And in terms of the way I put myself out there, like a lot of creative people, I'm insecure about my work
sure.
sometimes.
Sure.
And, you know, as a young artist, I'd always been like, oh, I can't put anything online that's not finished. Like, it all has to look
right,
perfect.
Right.
It has to be, like, I have to be super precious about it.
Sure.
Yeah. I have to curate myself. I can
mm-hmm.
only put the best of the best
yeah.
online. But then, like, my whole attitude has changed about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm totally comfortable now putting up... a sketch that I did
mm-hmm.
in 30 seconds
sure.
as much as I would be, you know, like a polished piece of animation that I've spent 2 weeks on.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same, I think, for comedians and people in the comedy world. I consider myself barely in it, but I'm in it. Is it, you know, if doing improv. Like, improv is so hit or miss that it's very similar to what you're talking about. You can't be precious about it. You have to just wing it. Hope it's good. If it's not, everybody just saw it. You just did it. So, you know, but people saw it, and the pressure to get better, I think, is there. I feel like, at least for me.
Yeah. Know? Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Oh, my heavens. I like going to theme parks, I think because I hate money. You know what that's like when you're mad at money, right? Open up your wallet, see a couple 20s in there, like, oh, you two. Oh, I'll fix you. The thing that I love and hate about theme parks is the the smashed penny machine. The classic theme park souvenir, smashed penny. You can get, like, whatever... special thing from the park on there, a little imprint. Sometimes you get like a name. You can personalize it. Well, not so much anymore because, of course, you're going to put curse words on there, and why wouldn't you? If you're willing to deface legal tender, I think you're probably willing to put curses on it.
Did you... So then I have to ask, if you didn't grow up around a whole lot of comedy, animation is a thing that I think of as inherently whimsical. So what kind of stuff were you growing up with that made you want to animate, though? There had to have been some funny stuff in there, but I'm just curious.
There was funny stuff in there. I mean, there's amazing animation, like the PBS stuff, the really famous... Now, I know, like, really, really famous independent animators, John and Faith Hubley, did these sort of whimsical pieces that were on Sesame Street and, like, little shorts that would be on public television.
Sure.
And then Canadian animation, stuff like Norman McLaren, like, that would be on. Just a lot of... that sort of quirky, like, independent animation that I ended up discovering kind of early.
Yeah.
Because I watched a lot of educational TV.
Sure, sure.
Because I wasn't allowed to watch much of anything
else. Right,
And I've always loved drawing. That's, it's always been something I'm, like, people said I was good at.
Sure.
And it's something I enjoyed. And it's a good fit for me. I have a very... sort of neurotic, meticulous way of approaching art, and that's really good for animators,
because
you go in and you're drawing frame after frame, usually 12 frames a second for 1 second of animation.
That's the one thing, and I think one reason probably why comedians appreciate your work so much is because that's the kind of thing no comedian can do. I don't think. We do not have the patience or the attention to detail in that particular way. We have attention to detail to other things. That I think it's why so many people are probably drawn to the fact that not only are you're inspired by their work, but that you're putting all this, what seems like impossible effort as a result of their work. You know what I mean? It's my brain can't, I thought I wanted to be an animator when I was about 12. Once I realized that you had to do all that work, I stopped thinking that. So I knew... I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to concentrate on something else. So I ended up, you know, thinking about comedy and stuff. So again, that's one of the reasons why I love your work so much, is because it is, again, there's just so much work behind it that I can't fathom.
Thanks.
Have you seen the stand-up that you're watching and the stuff that you're listening to change your art in any specific way?
The art I make for pleasure now, absolutely.
Because
my personal work is kind of dark. I've made a handful of short films that have gone around to festivals and things. They're always very, very, like, dark, sort of depressing pieces. Like, my first film was a sort of a documentary piece about this story, this crazy story I heard when I lived in Ireland. This guy told about... his mom saving the town from being burned down by British soldiers in 1912, I think. And then, like, my most recent film was about, like, this girl who, like, is lost, and it's night and it's late and she's jumpy and, like, it's sort of rapey at the end. It's very, very dark. And that's always sort of been my interest in terms of, like, personal... like, my personal style of storytelling, and my, like, just where I am as a filmmaker. And I've always been more comfortable with serious subject matter when it comes to storytelling and filmmaking until the past handful of years. Part of that is because I don't make... comedic work because I don't think I'd be very good at it, because I understand how difficult it is. Like, being funny is so difficult. And that's been even more cemented for me, going out and seeing this stuff and seeing the process. But I'm more loosened up to just draw and put out whatever I want more. And I feel more comfortable. Like, oh, okay, so I'm going to go, and I'm going to go to this show, and then I'm going to go home, and I'll draw a loop of Tignotaro pushing a stool, and it'll just be like a little second of her walking and pushing, and it's nothing, you know, huge or anything.
But, yeah.
And then I'll put it up, and it'll be done. It'll just be this silly thing.
That's cool.
So there's a lot more of that in the way I approach art making. It's more like fun and casual for me now. I take more pleasure in it now.
Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself trying to make anything expressly comedic, or just are you gonna
for other people?
Well, just your, any of your personal stuff. Do you see it? Because I mean, if I'm gonna go off, because again, I know what I've seen on your blogs. I haven't seen everything you made, obviously, but a lot of the personal, like the comic strips you do that are clearly about yourself.
Yeah,
they obviously have like really dark, wonderful human themes in them, but they're still very, quote unquote, light in some way. You're expressing them in a very quick way, so it has to be kind of, I guess I don't know exactly how to express it, but it does feel very comedic. They're all very funny, and they all express something very human, even if there's a dark element. Do you have any interest in doing that?
No, I do, definitely. I really like making those personal comics. Probably, like, the most well-known one is one about me being honked at. Like,
yeah.
I was walking down the street, one day, and this guy, and this is something that happens a lot to, like, a lot of women.
Sure.
Like, you just get catcalled and honked out, and, like, he rolls down his window, he's like, nice tits, and he drives away.
Oh,
and it's just, it makes you feel terrible.
Yeah.
It feels horrible, you feel violated, you feel on display. But I was like, oh, this could be a funny thing. I'll draw it up and I'll put it out there. And like a lot of people really resonated with that.
And I'm one of those. One of the first, I think it was the first one I read where it's like, where you put it in a different perspective, something I couldn't possibly understand. I'm never going to be able to understand, but you put it in that, you know, you gave me a quick snapshot of it. And I'm like, oh, fuck, wow. That's a thing I'm never going to have to go through, you know? So, and that's, again, that's art. So have you watched, I mean, your own art's developed. Have you watched people's sets sort of develop too? Do you get to watch a lot of the same people's sets like evolve, or is it a lot of different people that you're seeing when you see?
I'm seeing a lot of different people, but I have been, seeing Jen Kirkman a lot.
Uh-huh.
I saw her develop some new material a couple of months ago at Nerd Melt. And then, like, I'm curious to see, like, where it goes. Like, I want to see the material when it's more polished. It's always a treat.
Yeah.
Like, just to see that stuff evolve. And then people I've seen over and over, like, my friend Mike Kaplan, I saw him do material a couple of months ago when Comedy Bang Bang was still around. The live show.
Yeah.
The UCB show. And then I saw him... he came to LA this week and performed some of that same material, and it was a little more, you know, polished and locked down and tight. And it's fascinating for me to see how that kind of stuff evolves.
Do you, I mean, Paul F. Tompkins is sort of notorious for doing a new hour every year.
Yes.
Is there anything that you can equate in your own art, like where you have, I mean, he, that's just so, to have one full project at the end of 1 year, I feel like seems impossible for most people. Being a filmmaker myself, I know how impossible that feels.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's always amazing.
I don't know how he does it.
Well, and I think it's because he's truthful and he's personal, and I feel like art that comes out of truth is always going to resonate more than... I mean, I think silly observational humor is great, and there's definitely a place for it, but especially his more recent work, You Should Have Told Me, Laboring Under Delusions, and then, like, his new hour, it's all about, like, himself, really rings true to me, and it's one of the reasons that I'm such a big fan of his, is because he finds a way to make his experiences, he finds a way to frame them in a universally.
Yeah.
So it's, he's talking about himself, but he's talking about feelings that everybody can resonate with and understands.
Yeah.
He, like, talking about feeling insecure, feeling like you're not good at your job, mm-hmm. feeling that people don't like you.
Mm-hmm.
That's something every single person understands.
Of course, yeah. And he also just, again, to go along with the honesty, he feels to know his own prejudices, his own biases, and then explores them too. Like, he's one of these, he's so open.
And he is other, he's also open about his interests. Like, mm-hmm. I know, when I listen to his comedy, I know the things that interest him, mm-hmm. and that's really exciting to me. Because yeah. I feel like when people see my blog, you only need to look through a couple of pages, and you'll know me pretty much.
Yeah.
You'll be like, oh, I know what this girl's all about. Because mm-hmm. I feel like putting art out there that reflects what I'm interested in and yeah. what my personality is, it's a great thing.
I love kids, and I love my friends, and I'm very happy that they are now united. Kids and friends. I've been dreaming of this day. No, I'm really happy for them, but there is this phenomenon that if you don't have kids, and you know a lot of people who do have kids, it's this new dad speech that all new dads have, because it's like, you know this guy as your dumb friend, right? And now he's somebody's father. And that has dawned on him for the first time too, right? So there's this moment where, with my new dad friends, where they want to pull me aside and get all philosophical on me for a bit, because it turns out having a child has changed their life. What? You're telling me being responsible for this new life, it somehow made your life different? I just thought it would be the same, except with a baby.
Are there any other tracks that stand out on this album specifically? I don't want to keep derailing it. I feel bad. I apologize. You picked this album for a reason, so I want to make sure. You know, is there something, other tracks that sort of stick out to you specifically? It is just so, it's so stream of, if it's not stream of consciousness, it's very well crafted.
It's very well crafted.
It feels stream of consciousness.
It does, yeah. And the stream of consciousness stuff, like, it's almost the opposite thing. Like, mm-hmm. as when you look back on it and, like, you listen to it after the fact, you're like, mm-hmm. that seemed incredibly well thought out for something that mm-hmm. was being thought of in the moment. Like, as it's happening, it's sort of exciting because you're like, where's this going?
Mm-hmm.
But afterwards, it's like, wow, that was extremely well structured.
And he's almost dismissive of it sometimes, too. He just moves past it as though he wasn't thinking about it, but you know he was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to, let me pull up.
Sure.
We don't listen to it. We used to. I don't know if you heard the first three episodes of this podcast. I'm sorry if you did.
Oh, I'm sorry
if you did. They're funny, but we were listening to the albums and commenting at the same time. I don't know what I was thinking. But
well, there's a bit on this one where he talks about new dads.
Yes, right. Oh, God, yes.
Yeah. And I like, his first album is called Impersonal because mm-hmm. they're all sort of more abstracted,
mm-hmm.
Like absurd comedy bits.
Mm-hmm.
But New Dads, I think, is sort of a foreshadowing into, like, what his comedy would become.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about his friends and, like, things that are going on in his life and framing it in an incredibly funny way,
mm-hmm.
And in a way that everyone identifies with.
Yeah.
He's basically talking about how when his friends have kids, there's a speech that every single one of them does about how amazing it is to be a father and how having a kid changes your life.
Yeah.
And like, it's something that could come off as really snarky and mean.
Right.
And but it doesn't.
No, not
it
at all.
It doesn't at all.
And I think he's known, obviously, for not really, you know, doesn't rely on swearing. I mean, two, maybe three times does he swear in this album? Maybe. And he doesn't rely on that at all. And again, he doesn't have an angry personality.
It's really...
I don't know how he does it.
It's really good-natured. I like that it's not mean, mm-hmm. and it's... Like, whenever he's mean about anything, it's always, like, internal.
Yeah.
It's always, like, self-loathing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's mean to himself, and he's not mean about other people, which I think is super rad.
Right. Yeah. Whenever he gets, you know, quote unquote angry on stage, it's obviously so over the top that, you know, he's too nice of a guy to mean it. You know, and I... I'm trying to think. There was another bit in here. No, I did not want to actually play it. I just wanted to flip through them. Thank you, computer. let's see. Yeah, there we go. Yep, folks. That's right. there we go. He talks about the scary movie, the bits in scary movies, and I was thinking about the structure of the joke where he's talking about. That's what it was. It's a small example of why he's different. He talks about, he says, I like scary movies. At no point does he go to the audience to say, does anybody here like scary movies? He doesn't pull that hacky move.
Yeah.
He just starts a bit by, I like this. Let's talk about me and the thing I like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? And I feel like that's kind of illustrative of everything he does. You know, he's not asking you to participate. He just hopes he's got a good enough story for you to listen to. I feel like.
Yeah, and I think that's a really admirable way to approach it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's putting a lot of trust in the audience, too. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I could never do what Paul F. Tompkins or any stand-up does,
right.
Like, ever.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, him in particular, like, the amount of trust he puts into his audiences. Like, okay, I'm gonna... Especially, like, his newer stuff, where it's like, I'm gonna tell a 10-minute story about something that happened to me, and hopefully by the end of it, you're still with me. Or, like, the riffs that open up Freak Warp. And he has a thing about an enchanted bottle. Like, he's just going to drink water, and then someone... like, calls out something from the audience, and he's like, what's that? And then, like, no one says anything, and he's like, did you think I was talking to the bottle?
I didn't notice that till the second time I listened to it, either, because I was listening to it at work at first. I'm like, oh my god, that's brilliant.
It's so good. That's one of my favorite bits on there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's so damn funny.
How many? And just having that trust that he can go to these crazy places and then, like, we'll be there with him, like, for the ride.
Yeah.
I think, I'm starting to ramble. No. Not in a good way. No, not in a funny way.
No, it's fine. Again, it's all showing.
I appreciate, like, as an artist, the way I approach my art, like, I really admire his craftsmanship and the way he approaches his.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, the one thing, besides his skill, the other thing I'm jealous of is the idea that to know that you're going to have a record of that, literally a record of that, at the end of each year, you're going to have a chunk of something that you can say, I accomplished this that year. Mm-hmm. And at the end of your life, you're going to have this whole catalog of things you've done.
That's crazy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I wish I had that sort of dedication to make a film every year.
But you're going to have you have a blog, and you've probably got tons of sketchbooks of things that you can also look back on in your own way.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's weird to... I don't know what you would do, how you could take all of your sketches in one year and turn them into a thing, unless you were to turn it into, I guess, a book.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where I guess they're not comparable in that as someone who sketches, you're going to just be piling up all of your work. You can go back and look. Although I know as a poor cartoonist myself, going back and looking at my things, I don't like to do that. But
no, absolutely, yeah. There's some early blog entries that are pretty rough, but you know, I got to be honest about it. You know, that came out of me, and
right.
I made it, and you know, it's out there. You can feel free to take a look.
Are there you don't have to mention, you have to talk about it unless you're allowed to, but are there any projects that you're working on with any of these comedians that you're fans of that you can talk about? I know you mentioned something in an email, but
if
you're not allowed to say anything, don't.
No, when do these usually come out?
This will probably come out this Wednesday because I don't have any others banked, but I can wait. I can wait because I'm recording like 3 or 4 next week, so I can wait.
Well, there's a couple of things. Okay.
Okay. If you don't want them in, you just
no,
let
no,
me
no,
know.
No. It's probably fine. I met. Okay, so on the Pod of Tomcast is Paul talking, and then the guy doing the music behind him.
Oh yeah.
Is Eben Eben Schletter? He's someone I met because he did a series of shows at the Steve Allen, the Trepanier House at the Steve Allen Theater last summer. He did one every month. And I went to the first one, and oh, it was incredible. He played that Y'all Are Brutalizing Me song from Mr. Show on Theremin.
That's awesome.
I was sitting there in the audience, like, losing my mind. I couldn't believe, like, what I was seeing. And he put on these, like, very charming, very great shows. And I talked to him afterwards. And I sketched at those, too. And I talked to him afterwards and sort of showed him some things. And then, like, I think I emailed him some stuff later. But he found my work after that. And we've been, you know, sort of working on things together. Like, he has things in the pipe that he wants to do. I don't know, like, how specific I can be. That's but fine. He's a super busy guy and, like, very ambitious. And,
And a brilliant musician.
Brilliant musician.
Like, an improvising musician, which blows
my mind. Oh, my God. Yeah, and his albums are incredible, by the way. Yeah. You should seek out all of them.
Okay, I will.
They're really, really good.
I love his stuff. So I love everything he does on the Pod F Tomcast, which, while seemingly simple, is, again, all improvised.
It's all improvised. Yeah, he's another person that I watch him perform and I'm like, wow, like, I want to be that good. So I do artwork for him, like animation for him.
That's cool.
And through Eben, I met a lady comedy music duo. Sure, you can figure it out. Maybe they need music videos done for their songs, and maybe they found some animators that are sitting in this room to do it. So there you go.
Awesome.
And that will be done by the end of this month, probably. Okay. And I think as soon as it's done, like, it's we're just gonna kick it out the door and put it up.
That's awesome. That's exciting.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I love Garfunkel and Oates. I think they're amazing. So, I'm totally psyched to be working with them. Totally psyched to be working with Eben. Through Largo, I've met all these really cool people. I'm working on some pitches and, you know, pilots ideas.
That's awesome.
Just
that's
lots
so
of different people.
That's not something I guess I would expect, is that people, you know, the comedians you normally think are just looking for other comedians to do stuff with, or producers, but they're not, you know, they're looking for other artists to express their stuff with, and that's so good.
It's actually a really good thing, too, because we both bring something separate to the table.
Right.
They have their writing, obviously, and really good storytellers. And then you know, I know about storytelling too, but it's sort of a different language. Like, filmmaking is visual medium. And I know about visual cues, you think, to tell stories and tell narratives. But it's just bringing different aesthetics to the table and sort of combining them into this blob of creativity.
Never an apology. And it's not like I didn't give them the in for the apology either. I mean, I tossed them some nice fat softballs. You know what I'm saying? I made it easy. Just something like, wow. He certainly gave me quite a start, that dog that is your responsibility. Man, oh man. Whew, trying to catch my breath here. Oh, really scared me there. Me, a fellow human being with feelings and dignity. Whew. It's like I saw my life flash before my eyes. Oh, man. I was so scared, so scared. I mean, I'm sure that the dog would apologize if he could, but as he... as he lacks the capacity for speech, I wonder who will pick up the baton. Oh, of the three of us, who here is best equipped to apologize for what your dog has done.
Let's see, we've already covered that you didn't listen to a lot of comedy as a kid, that your parents denied you comedy. I'm joking.
My parents don't understand my career.
No, not at all.
At all, oh, by the way.
Oh, that's funny.
Like, they couldn't understand it less. Like, Paul F. Tompkins, like, literally means nothing to them.
Yeah, right.
Like, so they don't understand when I'm like, oh, I got to meet this really cool, like, comedian who I work, I really look up to. Like, mm-hmm. he likes my work.
Yeah.
To them, it's like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Who? Is he on TV?
Both my parents.
When are you going to work at Disney?
Like, that's... Yeah, right, right. Of course, of course.
Like, that's all most people know about yeah, animation.
That's true.
You went that to school true. For animation? Do you work at Disney? Right. Do you work at Pixar?
Right.
And they don't understand that it's possible to have an extremely fulfilling... an amazing career without having to be a cog in a huge studio like that.
Right, right. Yeah, I think I get... Both my parents are very supportive, but again, I can mention a lot of people, and I'll be like, I realize I shouldn't have told the person their name. I should have been like, maybe you've seen him in this and this, and remember that guy, this character? It turns out I'm a really big fan of his, and it's really exciting. And, you know, my parents...
Yeah, okay, it turns cool. out it's really exciting.
Yeah.
It turns out my life is really great, but you don't really know.
Yeah, so I relate, but you know, support. You get it where you can get it.
Yeah. Well, my friends understand.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Let's see. Do you, if you were to recommend this album to somebody, let's talk about it more if you want to.
Yeah.
I know you've got notes, so I want to make sure that we don't.
Oh, like, yeah, I'm just going
to. I want to make sure you don't miss anything. I almost skipped over the fact that you've got a bunch of stuff to talk about.
I've only had some college. Okay, that was part of
that was so good. So good. And you feel like there's almost, at one point, was a bitterness about that, but he's obviously gotten over it, and he just thinks it's just the funniest thing in the world.
Well, he's so articulate.
Yes.
And so smart.
Yeah, so clearly doesn't
like,
matter.
He didn't need it.
He's a success, and he's an intelligent man, so it doesn't matter, but it is very
I feel funny. Overeducated.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I guess
when I listen to him. Like, oh, I didn't need to spend all that time.
Yeah, I went to film school, and I'm not allowed to insult it, because it's a very sensitive school, but, you know.
Which film school?
I went to Columbia College Chicago. It's a very good school. But once you get out and come here and realize what the real world is like, you're like, oh, there's some things they should have taught me. A lot of things.
I went to CalArts for animation. And it was great.
Well,
I loved it.
Well, that's a school to go to for animation. I didn't, you know, I went to one of the side schools. I went to like a side street, sort of. It was good, though.
It was good. No, I loved it. I still really love school.
Sure.
I would be a student forever if I could.
Sure.
But yeah. That was a weird tangent.
That was, and I apologize. It's my fault. It's what happens. Again, feel bad. It's all me.
All right. I talked about this podcast, watching Process. Good-natured.
Mm-hmm. I've tried having notes on this show, by the way. It doesn't work for me. I can't do it. So.
I think I said most of what I wanted. I probably said more than what I wanted to say. putting your work out there.
See how long we can keep it silent.
Oh, okay. This is going to be a fun game for the listener.
No, but this is like, I'm glad that I had, like, I don't get the chance to listen to some albums. Like, the ones that are on the wall here, most of them I've probably heard a million times. But when somebody gives me something that I know I should have listened to, like, I felt guilty for not listening to a full Paul F. Tompkins album for a very long time because I've only heard a podcast.
Right.
It was very nice to actually listen through and see what he...
Freak Wharf is very interesting to me because it feels transitional. Like, you can see him growing as an artist, like, as a stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you listen to Impersonal, which is the one before it,
uh-huh.
and then his hour... after that, which is You Should Have Told Me, which is, I think, an absolute masterpiece. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so incredible. Like, you can see him becoming more personal and becoming more long format. Like, Freak Wharf only has, like, 10 tracks on it, I think.
Yeah.
But it's actually longer than Impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the bits are a little more, what's the word I'm looking for? Involved.
Okay.
A little more, he takes his time with them. He's sort of becoming a storytelling comedian.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a pleasure to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the whole, like, the classic cake versus pie bit, which is, like, one that a lot of people talk about.
Yeah, again, I don't know. Again, it's so simple, and I don't know how you can stretch it out that long and have it still be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's very simple stuff that, because of his personality, because of his ability to just keep drawing more from it, that, yeah.
And he doesn't. I also love that he's not willing to really do that much crowd work. He lets it go very quickly. He's like, "Let me do my show."
Yeah,
too. I really like that.
It's still a monologue. Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts of that too.
And I, as a side note, I think it should also be pointed out that he's amazing at accents and amazing at voices, and his characters are very funny and manages to improvise in character better than so many people. And I don't get it. I don't know his history besides Mr. Show and stand-up, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, you know, what gives him that skill or that ability, but, you know, he's got this... It could just be years and years in clubs that allow him to just snap
things
up. I think
it's that. I think it's a muscle that you train.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he's worked fucking hard, you know, to be as good at what he does now. And it's, like, very inspirational. This is sort of a tangent, too, but a thing that friends and I talk about a lot is, in terms of making art and being creative is a lot of people, when they're giving an artist a compliment, they'll be like, oh, you're so talented, you're so gifted, but I feel like that's actually misplaced because, like, art, like any other career, is just something that you practice over and over and over and over
until like an insult a little bit
until you get to just say, oh, how, like, you're so talented, good for you.
Yeah,
it's like, no, I've been doing this like my entire professional life.
Yeah,
and I work at it, like I still work at it every day. Like, part of the reason I keep up my blog and make animation of these sorts of things is so I can become a better animator.
Sure.
And I feel like Paul F. Tompkins, he's so good at improvising characters and doing voices and accents, and he has a recognizable cadence when he tells stories. I think it's the same thing. Like, he's oh no, my brain stopped working. He's
for the
just
first
working.
Time in the history of the show, it wasn't me. So I'm just gonna say, it's okay, but I'm just so proud that it wasn't me. Don't be offended.
Good. I'm happy to have taken to have shared that with you. It's something that he's worked at. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Like, he's practiced and he's honed his skills, and like you can see the amount of work that goes into it when he makes it seem so effortless.
Yeah.
Like, it's not effortless. It's very effortful.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's I think talent is a thing people use to make themselves feel special. The word talent. It upsets me and bothers me on many levels. So
I know, right?
I agree. Yeah, I've been working hard at this for a very long time. I'm not, you know.
Yeah.
And if you call somebody talent or you use the word talent, then they feel free to do whatever they want. They don't have to try anymore. But what good is that? That's not helpful.
No, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, wanting to keep trying and wanting to keep improving is key, I think.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything, and I hate this, put you on the spot about this because it doesn't make any sense. I've probably stretched as many metaphors as I can with comparing, like, parts of stand-up to sketching something or a finished product versus a finished animation or drawing.
Oh, there's a lot of parallels.
But what about improvising as far as sketching? Where would be the parallel there? Is that just sketching in the moment? Like, and trying to capture an entire 10-minute piece and put it into one drawing? Because that's kind of what blows my mind. I'm like, it's not like that person was standing there that whole time in one position. I don't know how in your brain you're keeping it.
Oh, that's a really interesting point. Yeah, because, I mean, I did a lot of life drawing in college, obviously. But when you're drawing a life model, they're just
sitting there,
posing.
Right.
Yeah, they're not allowed to move until the timer says they can. So that's actually a very apt parallel, I think, because you sort of have to make little snapshots in your brain. Like, look, I remember his hand was doing this a split second ago, so I'm going to try to remember what that was like, and I'll commit it to paper.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I get, you know, kind of funky-looking drawings, but I think it's really fun and challenging to draw people moving around and in the moment, and it creates a lot of energy in the drawings.
Mm-hmm. There's got to be then a specific skill in your brain because, you know, you normally think of people doing animation studies as let's watch film or let's watch Animals in the Wild. We can frame by frame the film. We can frame by frame some video. But in person, I guess there's got to be a different skill to being able to, if you wanted, like you said, animate Tig Notaro pushing a stool, mm-hmm. in your brain, you've got to remember essentially exactly how she moved and mm-hmm. exactly how the weight was and how, so I don't know what I'm saying other than, like, that's just an insane skill that I can't relate to.
Well, when I make animation, it is usually a little bit more studied, mm-hmm. and I will go through and watch things frame by frame. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when I'm just doing my sketches out mm-hmm. at shows, it can be pretty dicey sometimes. Mm-hmm. I feel like, oh, I don't know if I drew that as well as I could have. Mm-hmm. But they're just sketches, so you turn the page and you draw another one.
Yeah.
Like improv, right?
Right. I think so, except I'd rather watch somebody draw sketches than most improv. But that's just me. that's just me. So if you're going to recommend this album to anybody who hasn't heard Paul F. Tompkins before...
Yes.
...or hasn't heard his albums before and has only used him on podcasts, why would you recommend it? What would be the first thing you would say?
What would be the first thing I would say?
Mm-hmm.
I would say... he's an amazing stand-up, and he has a way of framing jokes in very surprising ways that are unexpected and very creative.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's on full display in Freak Wharf, absolutely.
Awesome.
There's lots of little surprises, and mm-hmm. like that's such. Every time I go back and listen to it, like I always discover like a little cadence of something, or mm-hmm. The way he says something, or the way a joke is framed, or like just something I hadn't noticed before.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's always a little bit of a subtext that I hadn't picked up on
right.
like, first or the second or the 10th or the 100th time I've mm-hmm. heard it.
Something that maybe was subconscious first and you just finally figured it out.
Finally, yeah, like something that finally clicked.
Let me then allow you to pitch, plug whatever you've got that you want to plug. Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook,
okay.
all that good stuff. Whatever.
Okay, so my Twitter is SarahSpot, just SARASPOT.
Mm-hmm.
And all my links to my websites are there.
Okay.
The link to my Tumblr is there, sarahpocock.tumblr.com. My Vimeo page, which has all my films and some other little things, is there. Here's something. I'm going to be in a... Are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be in a group art show that's going to be at Meltdown, like the Nerd Melt show space,
uh-huh.
on June 8th.
Okay.
It's Twin Peaks themed.
Oh, wow.
So I'll be making some Twin Peaks artwork for
that's
that.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. June 8th is the opening, and I think it'll be up in Meltdown from the 8th to the 21st.
That's
so
awesome.
If you're in LA, you should come to the opening, and if you can't, you should stop by and look at some artwork and buy some artwork. I'll have things there for sale and prints for sale, but yeah, it'll cool. be a really fun time.
That's awesome. That's so good. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely.
This was a lot of fun.
Oh, cool.
And again, everybody, please check out her art. Please check out Paul F. Tompkins. And as always, have a good thing. A good thing. A good thing.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Visit StolenDress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, rate us highly, and write your reviews. You can follow us on Facebook.com/ComedyOnVinyl and Twitter @ComedyOnVinyl.
She shouted out with me. Up came a happy, he threw me in the cut. The only thing that kept me afloat was holding me coconut.